Welcome to the Modern Woodworkers Association, a podcast about woodworking from folk who woodwork. Woodworking is what we do, who we are, and what we like to talk about. So join us as we have a drink, sit around, and talk woodworking.
Hi, and welcome to the 298th episode of the Modern Woodworkers Association podcast. I'm Kyle Barton of K. Barton Tools, and I'm here with my co-host, Sean Wisniewski of the Corner Workshop. And today, we're visiting with Joseph Thompson, an outstanding professional woodworker, instructor, and instructor at the Charleston Woodworking School. So, welcome to the show, Joseph. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. So,
for the seasoned listener, you may notice a couple issues we're having tonight. Kyle's lost power, and so we're talking on his phone, and my microphone decided to not work, and so we're on my laptop mic. So, bear with us. And
yes.
Thank you.
apologies. But Sean, you sound normal to me.
Well, that's good. That's good. That's the hope. You know, I always want to sound normal. I may not be normal, but
yeah. Well, before we get into more in-depth conversation with Joseph, why don't we see what's piqued our interest around the week or so? So, I got a couple of items that I thought was of interest. First one out, the new issue of Mortise and Tenon has been published. So if y'all are interested in that, they make a fantastic magazine. You know, anyone who's familiar with the Mortise and Tenon magazine, it's just a top-notch publication with top-notch authors. And I believe it's $24 an issue, something like that. But head over to Mortise and Tenon mag.com to secure your issues, and you can also buy back issues there too. And I think this is issue 8 that they have out.
Yeah, and I've never actually picked one up. I've seen them. Mm-hmm. I've definitely never purchased one, and I understand them to be fantastic. Are they, but as a name kind of lends itself to, are they more of the traditional Sapfum, you know, crowd?
Well, I don't know. Of course they are, but there are also a lot of, I don't know, they do hand tool, focused, a little bit more, what do you want to call it, vernacular type furniture. Mm-hmm. Also they explore. And, and their magazine, they call it a magazine, that's more like a journal. It's very well, the best paper and stuff like that they use for the magazine. So it's more than just your typical magazine. It's a real journal. And I've been picking them up since I think issue 4. So and they've all been great though. Okay. And you can go out and, like I said, they have back issues available there. So you can go out there and take a look at their table of contents and see what they're going to be talking about. And, if something doesn't interest you in one issue, I'm sure you'll find another issue that it does. So
excellent.
Yeah. But, even stuff you say, that didn't really interest me. Once you get the magazine or the journal and start reading it, it's like, wow, this is actually pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So, highly recommend it. And it's not too bad. $24. I think they publish like 2 or 3 a year, but it's just basically whenever they're done, they're done, and they publish an issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know it's not a not a monthly, not an annual. It's somewhere in between.
Yeah,
not a quarterly.
And then the next thing that I have up is actually a YouTube video of all things. But I've talked about the Ingles Coach Shop, the NGELS, Ingles Coach Shop. This guy's a coach builder. He builds new and refurbishes old coaches and wagon and stuff like that. So he actually makes like wagon wheels and steam bends those out of wood. So he really has a lot of experience in steam bending, and most of the stuff he bends is kiln dried wood, and it's thick stuff. It's like 3 inches by 4 inches or something like that that he's actually bending. And he's had a lot of videos to go into a little bit of his steam bending process. He just released a video that is nothing but about his steam bending process. So I highly recommend that if you're interested in steam bending. It kind of gives a a different perspective a little bit than what, you know, chair makers do as far as their steam bending. His setup's just a little bit different. A lot of it's very similar, but yeah, it's a unique perspective. So I highly recommend, if you're interested in steam bending, or if you do steam bending, to go out there and take a look and see what, you know, someone that makes wagon wheels, how they do it. So.
Yeah, I know. I really have always liked that. And it wasn't, yeah. It was like part of Norm's old intro was guys setting a wheel, like as he walked through the one village, you know, and they were like, they were pouring water on and hammering around it.
Yeah,
you know?
I think it was Roy.
Roy. I meant Roy, sorry. But yeah, that, and that always was like, oh, that is, it's interesting. I never really looked too into it, but I know in your chair making, you're big into steaming or bending, you know, for different applications. And yeah, sounds like a decent resource.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to check it out. Like, cause I need another YouTube channel to subscribe to.
Mm-hmm.
Like a hole in the head.
Exactly. Wizardry.
Yeah. But he has some neat stuff. I mean, the whole coach building thing is radically different.
Yeah, and, I mean, you know, when Schwartz started bringing out the Roubaud books, like there was one entirely on coach building, and it was like, wow. I mean, that really is, and for centuries has been, you know, an art into of itself. Because I mean, you can make furniture, but you make furniture that has to move.
It takes
different stuff, thicker, wider, more robust, but still, and then they would do ornate things with it, you know. But
it's really cool, and I highly recommend it. You know, one of the things I thought was interesting is, you know, those hubs that they have, those big hubs in wagons, so you know, yeah, it's like episodes about how they build those hubs. It's like, yeah, and how they put spokes on wheels and stuff like that. It's really interesting. It's nothing I would ever do, but it's kind of interesting to watch. So, but anyway, let's move on to what's in the shop. So, Sean, the shop.
So, recently we got bees, and my bees continue to be doing well. They're expanding in the hive and starting to store. And can't tell if the queen was laying eggs yet, but we're at this point giving her a week in between, so it's not like I haven't seen him in a few days. So interesting to see how that thing is going. It's a whole nother thing on top of it. But added to that, I'm making a very simple box to go as an additional chamber above where they're living right now. And actually watched Bob from I Like to Make Stuff. He made hives a couple months ago, I think. He rescued some bees that were like in his porch or whatever, and he made them out of cedar. And I went, oh, cedar. Yeah, sounds great. And so I got a 1x8 of cedar, and I cut them down into the sides that I need. And I'm going to hand cut box joints into them, really wide 1-inch box joints, like real thick tabs.
So it's going to be like a green and green style.
There will be no pillowing. There will be none of that. But I did discover, and it's not too hard to imagine, that it is incredibly hard to pair such a soft wood as rough sawn cedar. This is store-bought stuff, but that is so open-celled that, I mean, I've got, you know, my chisels have an absolute mirror-polished edge on them. And I can't take but the lightest scrape, and it's still tearing. Just trying to clear the bottoms of those things. I mean, the cutting down's fine. I basically dealt with these. I've never, let me preface this, never cut a box joint in my life, and I haven't cut a dovetail in years. But they're basically straight wall dovetails, right? And so, you know, you got my, you know, saw nicely down. I sawed the waste out. But I'm just trying to pair back to those lines, and it is a royal pain in the ass. So, it doesn't have to be pretty, and so I'm not really worried about it. But I'm just finding myself having to only use the pressure of my body on it. I can't hit it because it's just it's lumping up the grain. And just really just kind of delicately going in there, and I actually broke down. I was like, maybe if I just put, like, 60 grit sandpaper on a block
I can get in there and just wear it down. You know, just trying. And I worked on that over the weekend, and it was like hot outside, and I came down in the basement because I could see better and actually hold it better. And
yeah,
I was working on it, and my wife came down and said, "Oh, you picked the cool spot to work." And I said, "Yeah, you know, I can see better." But about 20 minutes later, I came up. I said, "That is way more time consuming than I thought." And I walked away. I was like, "Damn it!" So it's it should not take too much longer. I have three of the eight sides that I need to do. Does that make sense? Each board has been done on both sides. Yeah. So I've got basically the short sides. I've done three of the four of those edges. Mm-hmm. I tried to gang do it. I did gang cut down the just the kerf going down. And then I separated them to cut the waste out with the coping saw and then trying to fit them. But yeah, that's a fun adventure. I'd rather use pine at this point. Pine would probably be done because I can actually work with this. This stuff is just it's hard. I think that'll I may just go through a real nice honing of my chisels and see if I can improve it just a little bit.
Yeah.
And just see. But yeah, I think I just have to have absolute razor sharp.
I'm sure. I don't know. I've never done anything with red cedar.
No, for good reason, because there's no really good thing for it except for the fact that I'm putting it outdoors and it's naturally bug resistant. You know,
exactly,
it's not.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be that structural.
Yeah.
It is. But it like the weight is not an issue. It's just simple, simple stuff.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
So yeah, that's my trial and tribulation. How about you?
How about me? Well, I had a friend of mine actually repairing a smoking pipe for him. Or should I say, I have a pipe for him. So he had this little pipe that he bought, and from the I don't know the technical name of these things, but from the bowl to the mouthpiece, there was a little piece of bamboo, and of course the bamboo had a hole through it, and it was reamed on one side that the mouthpiece fit in, because the mouthpiece is tapered, so it fit in to that. A tapered thing. Anyway, that piece of bamboo got smashed, and so he's like, "Is there anything you can do with this?" I'm like, "Well, let me give it a shot," you know. And what was funny is I was sitting there trying to. There's like this little out of the bowl. There's this little metal tube that would stick into the bamboo piece. So I go, "Well, I got to get a drill bit that fits that." And I kept going back and forth and couldn't find anything that would fit it with some test holes. And finally, I happened to say, "Well, let me see. Let me go metric on this." And I went metric, and sure enough, 5 millimeter fitted. And I was like, glad I have the 5 millimeter drill bit.
Who knew?
Yeah, who knew? But that fitted. And then after talking to the guy, he goes, "Oh, yeah, that pipe's from Japan." I'm going, "Oh, okay." That makes sense then.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I made a little maple piece, and I actually turned it on the lathe and kind of made it look a little bit like bamboo. And then put that in there, and it seems to work. I did not have a reamer for the mouthpiece, so I actually did that with a real slow process with the rat tail rasp, one of those RU rat tail rasps.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to get it to fit pretty well. You know, what I really need is, you know, I sit there and measured as best I could the taper on the mouthpiece. I think it's at probably at about a 2 degree taper. So it's probably was done like for a violin or something like that. They got those violin peg reamers for, you know, the pegs that tighten up the strings. So I think it was probably done with something similar to that. But anyway, I got it where I think it'll work. Anyway, I just got to get it back to my buddy now and see how it smokes.
Yeah, that is,
there's something different.
Yeah, it's different. That'd be a slightly daunting thing, you know, like,
yeah.
This has to have hot gas go through it. Like,
yeah, I read an article, I forgot where it was, a few years ago on some guy that makes pipes.
Okay.
And, yeah, he's a woodworker, and he got into the pipe making where I think they use like all kinds of roots and burls and stuff like that to make bowls and all of that. And it seemed pretty fascinating, but yeah, he said it was pretty lucrative for custom pipes too. So I don't know. Maybe that's... We'll see. So far, so good.
You're going to figure out a new jig to make this easier, and there's your next venture.
I was looking at it, and I was like, there might be something there. But But speaking of jigs, I am making a custom stretcher jig for a customer. I think he uses the reamer that Sean Murphy does, which is at 11 degrees, so it's 5.5 degrees on each side. Mm-hmm. For the taper tenons. So made a custom one of those. So to do that, I had to make a custom jig to make that tenon, which was kind of interesting. Since I came up with the lathe tenoning jig, I was able to say, okay, I can just make a custom one of those that'll help me turn that tenon. So anyway, I got that almost done. I'm just waiting for a finish to cure on it, and I'll send that off, and hopefully it'll all work out right. But it's like the first time I've made one of these without having a mortise to test them in. But everything seems spot on as far as I can measure it, so I'm sure it'll be
very cool.
Yeah, so anyway, so that's about what I've been doing. So Joseph, what have you been working on in your shop? I think I know, but I'll let you explain.
About years ago I designed a little rocking and build a scale model. It's kind of when I was building a lot of men at the time, and I went ahead and made the scale model and things like that, and two kids, and all of a sudden 6 years down the road with the shutdown, I had some time to go ahead and try to make it happen. So I've and then kind of just for myself, Katie and I wanted to have some to kind of focus on these lives. So yeah, I was able to take it on and on my last finish last night. It's basically it's a backless rocking, and I just posted a picture of it tonight a few minutes before I got on with you guys. And it's essentially I'd built another rocking that was all steam, and this one was more straight lined, and what I wanted to basically just have a little stool that you could move. This isn't a rocker, just a backless stool that somebody who be engaged in their work at an easel or at the computer or putting on their shoes, or it's just basically a stool that rocks, tilt forward, flats on the far or on the front end of the rocker, and perch forward and actually still too. So it's kind of a really just trying out I'm pretty good. So I'm pretty pleased that it first time I've built anything in a long time, not for Gus, but kind of different.
That's good.
Yeah. It's a fascinating design. Yeah, I like the little flats on a perch. I know a lot of folks build those perch stools, so this is kind of like that, but then you can also rock back and forth on it. Yeah, that's right.
Really, and it is, and it's at regular kind of diameter height. So it's really kind of a stool that can kind of be on it on the side, you know, basically kind of like an occasional chair would be in a room, sitting on its own, but still able to pull it under the chair or under the table. Someone could sit at the table if they were fidgety and wanted to have something. It kind of was born from looking at kind of the way people work. This is before, it's funny, when I designed, this perch that it's pretty famous now, just especially in the woodworking community. But I'd read it's basically how in other cultures, people, we're used to working at a bench. Or like they stoop or they squat. And it's really kind of, and I know that, so much, so many seating these days, especially couches like that, are just grossly sit. You can't, you sit with a kind of a hunched over back.
Right.
Really bad for you. And the idea was, I love a nice rocking chair that you relax in. But these two rocking stools that I've done have focused on their no back, designed to hopefully when you sit in it, you naturally sit with good posture, core muscles, and you kind of sit automating about it, your spine aligned. And this one particularly, if you look at it, most of the time you see a chair, it's kind of tilted back. And this, it's engaged if you're working and you're sitting with kind of an open hip position. And that more than 90 degrees. Kind of, if you can imagine, that's 5 degrees. It's really, good for your back, especially if you're working on something. And that was kind of the idea of designing. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't know if it was going to work or not. I mean, just I thought that the miniature looked great. Until this lockdown, I hadn't ever moved it to drawing, the scale model, mock-up form. So until I was actually able to sit, I didn't know it was going to work or not. You hope things work out.
Yeah.
But they don't always, but it worked out this time, at least for me and for Katie. And then, you know, that's also been the case. It's always, and for me, for us, it was kind of made for us. So it works for us. That's a plus.
No. Yeah, I've seen it on some of your live streams. I usually don't catch them live, but I'll see the recordings, and it looks fascinating. It's like,
sure.
Yeah, I definitely want to sit on it because it looks neat. So are the rockers, you know, I know they got the little flat part on the front of it, can kind of do the perch thing. But is the rest of it symmetrical, right. Or is it a portion of a curve, or is it more elliptical, the rockers themselves?
It was out of a true radius. I just kind of modified part to be flat.
Mm-hmm.
Straightened it out basically right at the end, you know, manually.
Right.
Just kind of figured out where I want it flat and it out.
All right, cool. So let's go a little bit, back up a little bit, because I got a lot of questions here, but tell us a little bit about your background and stuff. I know from what I've seen online and stuff, that you got kind of a start in boat building, right?
That's right. I went to college. I left college after kind of...
Whoa.
Is that me? I hope not.
I think that's Sean. Is that you?
I'm not doing anything but scrolling.
I don't know. I just heard some going. I don't know. Maybe it's me.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Start over. Okay. I think it's...
Okay. All right. Ready for me to start?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I went to college for 2 years and really was just... know what I want. You probably shouldn't have gone, and done so. I did. So basically, decided that, you know, and I had never built any before. Mm-hmm. I decided I want to build wooden boats. And
let's go ahead and start with the hardest stuff.
Yeah. What do you? I'll say zero woodworking, and I started picking up old chairs, and I had a chair. My father took it apart. Just taking it in there, you know, just was really refinishing. And how's this mm-hmm. thing put together, and why is this falling apart? And really got interested in the building. So I piqued my interest to working, and then a friend of mine probably kind of going to similar in his schooling, and we decided we were going to British Columbia and learn how to build wooden boats. And after much ridicule and side eye, but my parents, that we decided to go. I basically took a ship's cabinetry and mm-hmm. and then the next part was kind of an in-boat building, built a Herreshoff design haven, which actually Joel White designed this. Finally, a Herreshoff, basically a day sailor. But all
okay.
Traditional, and kept the boat, trailered it back to, yeah, and that and kind of got started with that. And when I came back to South Carolina, I knew that boat building wasn't going to be what I was going to do, even though I loved it for myself, maybe. But I was going to custom furniture. That's kind of how I came home and started taking orders. That's how
wow. I got started. Well, cool. So, yeah. So how long have you been operating your
boat? So that 2004 and a half, like that.
Okay.
And so, yeah.
Yeah.
And a half, it's a good long while.
Yeah.
So, I guess, you know, a few years after that, you know, I've been doing custom orders for a while and decided that I felt like, I'm sure everybody does when in the shop, especially before the Instagram, and I felt like I was in the wheel. All would do my fair share of but, you know, really trial and error. I decided I really wanted to try to get a little bit more instruction, and that's decided. And there was an opening in the 12-week intensive, and then within a few weeks, I was heading up to Maine for.
Yeah.
That's what I kind of credit, I guess, for a lot better term, my finer, more into or more in depth
instruction. Mm-hmm.
Besides all the just countless months, just. Figuring stuff out, you know the deal.
Yeah, exactly. So well, that's cool. So are you from that area? Are you from up in the the main area at all, or
no? Were you, no, born and raised in rural South Carolina.
Okay. I didn't think I thought I saw a South Carolina accent there, but I didn't want to assume anything. You know.
To a Texan, that may not sound like North Carolina. It sure as hell does to me.
No, it does to me. It does to me. But you know, I noticed because I think in your profile, because the boat building was too, right or not?
That was.
Oh, British Columbia. Okay. So, sorry, I must have misread there. But yeah, well, even so, it's a boy. You've gone a long way from South Carolina, boy.
British Columbia.
Wow. So, well, that's fantastic. So, most of your business has been on commission, correct?
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard that. So, most of your business has been on commission. Is that right?
Oh,
that's correct.
Okay. That's correct. I thought we lost you there. Okay. So, well, that's cool.
You did. But
it's a challenging evening. So you've been in business for about 18 years now. Katie, your partner, has been involved in all that, and I know y'all are now doing some stuff on live stream. So tell us about the project that you and Katie are. Now, Katie's a great friend of the show. In fact, I'm sure she told you she'd been on a time or two.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, well, thank goodness for Katie for all kind of reasons, but she's got me to finally get on Instagram and media, anything. Several of you started the Instagram. But yeah, if it wasn't for her, I'd be in the woods by myself and nobody would know a thing. So, definitely. We decided that we were going to try to make the best of this downtime and kind of take this rocking school that I'd been designed several years ago, kind of document the process. So really that's good. Monday and Wednesday we kind of take a day for Q&A, really kind of cover about what I think of, whether it's part of it's about the project, it's about how to get your work out there. Today we mentioned some about the come down, kind of a real thing. I don't know if you guys.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Once I finish them, it's like, yeah, I don't want to be in the shop for about a week or so. I'm kind of done.
it's kind of like trying to figure out where I am.
I'm sure you're like a lot of it. You just get so intensely involved in a project and working out all the problems and issues, and that's half the fun. But after you're done, like, hey, I need a break for a little.
I have to this information keeping me up at night, keeping me up in the morning. So.
Exactly.
Was that hard to get used to going live to essentially an invisible audience? It's not face to face teaching. It's the whole idea of live streaming seems a little daunting to me. Just like you've got to be comfortable talking to an inanimate object.
Yeah, for sure. And that's not something anyone. I do when I have a student in front of him. That's no problem. But in front of a camera, and it's oh my goodness. and that's something I've improved with help from Kim. Basically, it's kind of like, all right, man up, get it done, and now I'll be all right.
There you go. That's fantastic. So part of this project. So now that you got the project built, y'all are actually going to go over on how you're going to market this chair and stuff like that to.
Yeah. And, so I think we're gonna go taking photos. How we do that? Sure. This is something completely new for us as far as not having it. Most of the time it's done, it's sold. All of the stuff that goes along with that, and this piece isn't for anybody. So we're gonna have we've done marketing, but it's been years since I've built a piece. We're gonna try to cover it all. We're gonna take photos of how we're gonna get in front of it. I can't do something, fake or like, no, you just work. I'm gonna ask right on.
That's cool.
That's kind of how it happened. And I just really, I wouldn't have been able to do some kind of production. I just couldn't. I just had to do my thing. And she's asking questions, forwarding questions that somebody's asking on, and kind of go from there.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting. I hope he's got some good ideas about how to sell it, because I kind of. I'll leave that out there.
Well, that's fantastic, because I know a lot of folks that build. I mean, they you know, and they might want to sell a piece of furniture here or there. And this is going to be a real great opportunity for them to see, hey, this is one avenue on how you could do that if you wanted to. So that's fantastic that y'all are putting that out there.
Yeah. Well, that's really what it's about. I mean, I loved it. I really got into Instagram was sharing, processing, just sharing the knowledge. That's what that's what kept me coming back to what I would gain from others. It's kind of sharing what we know, sharing what we don't know, and just taking you along for the ride. Honestly.
Cool. Awesome. So tell me, you know, so you do a lot of commission work and things of that nature, and you know, you've done this this rocking stool, that something that you said you've been kicking around for a while. So what is it that you do like to design and build? Is it more seating or more cabinet work or boats or what?
It definitely it changes some. You know, there's something about cabinet casework. Really precision. I love that. I have this where I'm in sculptural mode, like really critical fitting, you know, planing and things like that go along with casework, fitting drawers and doors to where they're just, you know, where they sink. But then also, you know, there's definitely a pull and a draw to something about it really just speaks to me. It's a piece, these really are some of the that really interact with human body, and that just
right.
There's, yeah, exactly. You know, there's the opposite. So, you know, what works for one person absolutely doesn't work for the next. You know, in a chair, and that's fascinating. And you know, there has to be something. Doing a one-off chair is not loop at all. I mean, far from it. You know, no. I'm so much involved with doing a one-off.
Yeah,
I don't even want to get into how long loop that and how many you'd have to sell. I'd rather not think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But they are interesting. Yeah. That's why I love chair making myself. It's just the interaction. You build something and then you're going to actually, you know, sit in it. And exactly. And try to get that comfort just right. Get the lean back just right. You know, all that kind
right.
of stuff. It's
oh, man. It's so much.
Yeah.
And it's hard. I love the chair. It's definitely something you hear about, like chair making. I stay away from that.
Yeah.
Honestly, my start was I never was afraid of curves.
Right.
Fortunately, maybe I didn't have really a reason to be that confident, but I was. It was not to dive into the chairs, and then I was, you know, there. Oh, and just looking at Kyle's, what he's come up with, and forgive me if it's been I'm just intrigued by the jigs and what you got going on. The whole chair, I mean, that's something I have been really interested in that too.
I definitely appreciate
the challenge.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. My job now is, since I'm making jigs, not building chairs anymore, I've put it in my job now is to tackle every chair joint, make it as simple as possible, so that all you have to do is concentrate on the fun stuff like carving a seat and things like that. So
we'll see. Well, you know, that really makes it more accessible. Good for you on you.
Yeah. So we'll see how successful I am. But anyway, so you also you teach at the Charleston Woodworking School. So I think you and Katie both teach there. So tell us a little bit about how you got involved with that.
So through some kind of colleagues down in Charleston. That's about an hour from kind of started the talk of my shop is the box, which is awesome. But, you know, just getting people to drive. I mean, it's just a little bit of a drive, but then you're coming into your home, that's fine. But the little bit, you know, having Charleston get involved with that has been really great. Got to know the founder, Sam, and kind of hit it off with him. Started doing some short classes. He hired Kate both and a few days. Days with the students, and then Katie did them and marketing class. Then over the summer, and I think he had 6 students last year, and then all of a sudden there was 14. And he hired me basically 3 days. That's been awesome. I mean, not only just having a paycheck is great, something I haven't done in years. you know, everything's been, man, between commissions and heaven has been awesome. But I love, and I didn't know how much I would like it until I started some teaching in my shop. Kind of realized, so that was, he said, come on. I said, tell me when. I really enjoyed it. Unfortunately, we got cut off here. I think they're
right.
getting back to it right now. Katie and I are just personally, we're holding back a little bit about getting back out for the immediate, but hopefully, planning on being back for the next semester.
Oh,
yeah. And it's a great school. It's there isn't a school in Charleston. Now there is. It's been there for a few years. Demand. And he went to the Chippendale School in Scotland. And
wow.
He brings a lot of, he loves and marquetry and all that goes along. Kind of more modern studio furniture vibe. So getting kind of both sides of it. I think it's a great spot. A lot going on. I learned just being there, and it's a great atmosphere. I mean, just the atmosphere itself is just intoxicating to me. I mean everybody is there, like ready to. Man, there's something about that. It's awesome. I mean, I love it.
Oh, that is cool, and it's great because you know, I think the South is now opening up. There's now a few schools where they used to always be in the Northeast or in or around that area, you know, Ohio and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Sean, you suck. But anyway,
I don't know what you're talking about. They're not in my end of Ohio. Go on.
Maybe not your end, but you know. But you know that
school in
Midwest, Northeast. That used to be where almost all the schools, and of course, you had some out in California and the Washington area. But yeah, we're starting to see some pop up in the South. It's really exciting for folks.
School of Woodwork in Florida.
Yeah,
that's a great one.
Yeah, we got Austin School of Furniture and Design now in Austin, Texas. We've got a couple of chair makers here and there that are doing classes now here in the South. So it's fantastic. So let me ask you a little bit about what next. So you've got a lot of irons in the fire, but what are you looking forward to working on next?
So my next project, wardrobe. You guys hear me okay? I just got a
question.
Yep. Okay.
You're good.
Got a wardrobe, and it's a large special. This is a log that my father and I technically washed up on the lake. You can't retrieve logs from the lake. It did actually wash up on the lake on the beach. And
I didn't see any chains or hooks being used.
There weren't. Not in daylight. Yeah, and that was an Alaskan sawmill. We have a wood miser, pre-wood miser day. My father and I, and it turned out. We 24 inch board.
Wow.
Ended up at least 800 years old.
Oh my God.
Had no idea. I mean, this, you can imagine with lines. Thing.
Right.
I mean, just open it up and it's gold. The colors that came out of it, I mean, the color, oh man.
Yeah. So what species is it?
The reds and the blues. And cypress.
Cypress.
So, oh, wow.
I guess bald cypress. But I called it a fecky cypress. I don't know if you're familiar. It's actually a fungus that while the tree's alive, it's like big fissures, channels that are out of while the tree, you know, I can remember. Cutting it up, being, like I said, you know, it's only like the last of their solid, but it's beautiful. And the challenge is going to be, this is a fairly modern, traditional hecky cypress that's like paneling in a rustic setting.
Yeah.
That's not going to be so definitely going to be challenging. And it's, you know, to pull that off. That's what's coming up next. So a large, basically the client doesn't have much closet space. So it's going to be a closet, but gonna have two tall doors on the outside, closet space, and a bank of drawers, and it'll all be this pecky cypress. And
So are you gonna have to stabilize it? Are you gonna have to stabilize the stuff with something?
I'm not planning on.
We'll see how it goes.
For the way it is.
Yeah.
Be a dovetailed carcass.
Yeah.
And that's not happening. The material in the middle is gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically like webbing material, but it's in a frame. the panel said it's going to be yeah. fine. And I have material this size, just kind of corner post, for like a, I guess, mm-hmm. corner post that'll hold a frame panel.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So it's, yeah. The challenge is, that's going to be fine. And about that, it's kind of how to make it not look rust. And, not that I'm anything wrong with that particular, is more, more mm-hmm. straight line, more modern.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, well, you just have a little bit of the juxtaposition between material and the actual piece itself, you know?
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah, it should look really cool.
Yeah.
Unlike red cedar, I'm actually with cypress, and and it's kind of challenging in itself. It's light and stringy, and
oh wow,
yeah, and it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't,
yeah, I mean, yeah, you look at it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that kind look of, at it yeah. in a dense and stuff like that. Yeah, it's kind of challenging to work, and yeah, that's another one you got to have really sharp tools.
That kind of stuff. I mean, it's not quite petrified, but you know, being set in the minerals of the water for as long as it did, and being that old, you know, it may have different properties. It may, I mean, obviously it's eaten away a little bit, but
yeah,
you know, you could find it that it's real mellow to cut, you know, because it's sat in water for God knows how long.
Well, and it's old growth, so you know that's in itself is a different animal. So
yeah, exactly.
You know, what I find new cypress, you know, how crazy it goes once you cut it. This stuff is very. I mean, you can't even get it so tight. And it's so stable, you know, as far as the way it behaves afterwards. But it's still soft, still stringy. Mm-hmm. Not so much stringy, but it's been. You can imagine all. I mean, it's full of sand, and so. There's that.
Oh yeah,
finding that with.
Oh yeah, I can imagine.
There's that. There's definitely some of that. But yeah, it's cereal, and it's dear to me as far as my father and I. I'll in most part until I'm cussing it. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. You know, it ought to take you at least 5-10 minutes. But anyway.
Might not be the longest journey to that point.
Yes. Yes.
But
anyway,
really, it helps, especially right, and off the hand plane.
Yeah.
You know, that fin. As long as I don't hit too many rocks and grains of sand, then I should be able to pull it off. Pull off. It really does. I mean, I say it just has a shimmer to it. It's neat. Nice stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah. I once, when I was a budding young chair maker, I tried to make a seat out of cypress for a Windsor chair. And I did that once.
Right. One just like, time.
One time. I was just like, oh, no, this is not going to work. But anyway, learning experience. Everything's a learning experience.
Live and learn. Live and learn.
Live and learn.
That's right.
But anyway. But with that, let's get into our fortnightly beer choice.
All right.
So I'll start off. I'm drinking a little red wine since I have no power here and I don't want to open the fridge and let any cool out. Yes, I'm still with no power. So I'm drinking a little red wine. But what about you, Sean? What are you drinking?
Besides the requisite Miller Lite, because that's just kind of the staple in the house, I did pour a glass of good. It's not fresh squeezed. I don't have lemons or lemon trees. I live in the north. It doesn't happen. But some good fresh lemonade from a local grocery store here just hits the spot. Just choice. Love it.
Fantastic. So are you going to sweeten that lemonade someday with your own honey?
Maybe. That is the most common question I get. It's like, what are you going to get?
I'm sure
honey?
It is.
I'm like, okay, first, there's a lot more to it. And we're just, my primary objective right now is to get them to survive because we invested a fair small amount of money into doing this. And it's an interesting experiment. So let's see the colony survive first and not run away on us. And then we'll talk about it.
Oh, wait, a major announcement.
You got power.
No. Power truck is moving down my street towards the transformer.
You may get power soon, man.
I may get power soon. Sorry to interrupt you, but, you know, that's the highlight of my day so far.
That is exciting news. But no, yeah, anyway, maybe someday I'll have some honey-sweetened lemonade. We'll see.
Well, fantastic.
That, I don't even know how that would taste. We may find out.
Well, one thing I meant to ask you at the top of the show. So we're recording this on Wednesday, May, whatever it is.
27th.
So yes. This was the day that SpaceX was going to shoot their Falcon. So were you glued to the TV like I was till they scrubbed the mission?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was watching it. I was talking about it with my coworkers. You know, and we had a good discussion about that. And I love that stuff. I follow it pretty closely. Not as much as maybe a Houstonian or near Houston guy might. But, really kind of upsetting to see it scrubbed 16 and a half minutes before
lunch. But, well, I knew it wasn't nationals because all of our stations were covering it, but it was a local news team that was covering it.
Well, no, and it was like, you know, it's funny because I work with guys, you know, they're older than me. Well, I'm just saying, okay, I'm going to be not rude. They're your age. They're older than me. I was like, hey, you know, and we had a meeting like, and it was in the afternoon. I said, hey, in an hour, we're going to do this. And one guy was like, why is this a big deal? I'm like, okay, so it's the first time that we're U.S. astronauts are leaving the American soil in 9 years. So that's momentous in itself. And then all the details about the rocket and stuff. And he goes, oh, well, I'll make sure, I'll set that to tape it. I went, it's on YouTube. And it's not just on YouTube one place. It was like simulcast on 7 different channels. Yeah. You know, you could have found it eight ways to Sunday, and it's not like you know, it will be. And so now it's scrubbed in Saturday, and if not Saturday, Sunday. I mean, this is going to happen here in the coming days. So
The great thing about seeing this kind of stuff in Houston is, like I said, they got the local news covered. But, you know, they have all these retired astronauts, you know, coming in, telling their stories, you know, and stuff. So it's pretty cool.
Well, and from my time down there, because the office I was at when I was near you was really around the block from the Johnson Space Center.
Yeah.
And so when they mentioned that, I'm like, I saw that. I was right next to that. Like, it was like, I mean, I had no sense in, you know, touching it, seeing it. I didn't go into it at all, but it was like, oh, I'm familiar with the street that's on.
You know, yeah. Like,
that's cool.
Yeah. And NASA Road 1.
Yeah.
And, but anyway,
Discovery Way or Saturn Way or Saturn.
They got all that. All that around there. Jupiter, Saturn, Mercury. But it's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, so sorry, I meant to ask you about that at the top of the show. But, so Joseph, what are you drinking?
Coca-Cola.
All right. That's a good southern drink, like that.
You know, I'd probably be much better off with some beer, but Coca-Cola, that's kind of my point. It's I'm just not a big beer drinker. I know that was, I don't fit in really good, but hey, that's the way it goes.
You're
good. So my only question on that is caffeine at 10 o'clock at night. I mean, that's... Yeah.
Well, you get used to it, you know.
Yeah.
It's just a slow burn. I used to be a Coke addict. I could go through a case in a week.
Well, I mean, I usually have a Coke in one hand and a coffee mug in the other, so at least I have one.
There you go.
So in South Carolina, is like... So in Texas, if you go into some place and they'll say, you know, what do you want to drink? And you say a Coke, and they'll go, what kind? So a Coke could mean a Dr. Pepper, a 7-Up, a Pepsi. It's just,
I've never understood that. I understand soda or pop, you know, as a general term for soda pop, but not Coke or Pepsi.
Yeah. Yeah, in Texas, it's Coke. Coke's just like the generic term. Which is kind of interesting since it was in Atlanta and Dr. Pepper was actually born in Texas, which is kind of strange. But anyway.
Oh, wow. It's mostly like I asked for it. Well, no.
That won't work.
Then never mind.
See.
That's funny.
Yeah. I gave up Coke a few years ago, but before I did, we could have been simpatico with that. Yeah. It's only Coke. If you don't have Coke, no. Your Pepsis will. You know, I'll do Dr. Pepper. I'll do a Sprite. I'll do a 7-Up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Something else.
Something else.
Don't give me that.
Yeah. Well, with that said, so Joseph, where can folks find interwebs?
Oh, they can find me on Instagram at JWT, and on the internet it's Joseph Thompson Woodwork and JWT Woodwork. Whatever you put in, that'll come up. That'll send you to my website. Yeah, that's, you know, most everything is right now is much on Instagram. I mean, that's so easy to update, and that's really kind of where at. Well, on YouTube, we've been putting these live streams. So,
cool. I'll have to look for y'all on different. YouTube then.
Yeah, that's a recent development as far as the, you know, when we'd been doing these live streams. Katie had made me an account, and you know, we'd posted some of my steam bidding videos and things like that, but you know, it wasn't something we regularly added to until these live streams.
Yeah. So is it JWT Woodworks on YouTube?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic.
I hope so.
Well, if not, if they search for Joseph Thompson and woodworking, I'm sure they'll come by it there.
Kate's going to be happy about me not knowing that, but it'll be all right.
That's okay.
I can't remember it all.
All righty. So, Sean, where can folks find you?
I'm on most social medias as SeanW78, so you can find me there. How about you, Kyle?
And you can always find me at Barton.Kyle on Instagram, the only social media platform that matters. And with that, that just about wraps it up for this show. So if you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. Then you'll never miss any of our exciting episodes. And while you're there, please leave us a review.
Thanks for listening to the Modern Woodworkers Association podcast. If you like the show, please be sure to visit us at modernwoodworkersassociation.com. You can follow us on Twitter at MWA_national or on Instagram, the only social media that really matters, at MWA_podcast, or like us on Facebook. The best thing you can do, though, is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.